Good afternoon. Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judges Larkin, Siegel, Riley, the Honorable Michelle A. Larkin presiding.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals this 15th day of July, 2020. We are holding our calendar via WebEx platform this afternoon. And I don't know if the attorneys have participated in this format before. I'll tell you that the rules are the same. Each attorney will have 15 minutes to present his argument. We'd ask each of you to please state your name for the record before beginning your argument. And then appellate's attorney will have 5 minutes, I'm sorry, for rebuttal argument if he chooses to use it. The one thing that can be a bit difficult in this format is recognizing when one of the judges has questions. We tend to raise our hand to signal a question, so please be on the watch for that hand movement. Also, the marshal will display, I believe, an iPhone or some such device that has the timer, so you should be mindful of that image on your screen, and it'll help you to keep track of the time remaining in your argument. With that, we are ready to hear the first case in re the request for records by Amina Mohammed, who is appearing on behalf of appellant in this case.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Max Keller, M-A-X-K-E-L-L-E-R, for Ms. Mohammed.
Right. You may proceed with your argument, Mr. Keller.
Basically, this is a case where something sorry, I lost you there. Can you hear me okay?
Okay, I can hear you now. Can everyone hear Mr. Keller? All right. Why don't you resume your argument, please?
This is a case where something is rotten in the state of Denmark, as Shakespeare would say. A man was murdered, then he committed a fraud on the court to get an acquittal. He intimidated witnesses. Some of them were so scared they left the country. This is what the testimony was at trial, apparently. We can't get the transcript to prove that, to your honors. Then he committed another fraud on the court to get his records expunged. Largely, none of this is on the county attorney's office, which brings up the question, the court directed us to serve Bimin Omar, B.O., with the notice of appeal in this case, which we did, and we provided proof of that. And it makes sense because he's the one that has an interest in this, not the county attorney's office. If anything, the county attorney's office would not want this expunged, since this is a person that they had indicted for first-degree murder. They obviously thought he was guilty of first-degree murder, and they actually argued in the trial court, in the trial, for the admission of grand jury testimony.
Counsel, could you tell us what is the order from which you appeal, and what relief do you seek from this court?
Sure, Your Honor. Thank you, Judge Larkin, for that question. So the order states that Ms. Mohammed is not allowed to see the records from the expungement file. As we said in our brief, we're not even seeking to get the records from the murder case. My client and her family were there to observe, so they know a lot of things about what happened. They were never informed of a petition being filed for expungement. We don't have the date of when the expungement order was filed. We can't see the expungement order. We don't know if the county objected or not, although I believe they've said that they did not object, but other county attorney's offices have in similar circumstances. Yes, Judge Larkin?
Counsel, so I take it that the district court denied your request for access to the expungement file. And what On what grounds do you suggest the district court erred in denying that request?
Well, the suggestion is that somehow Ms. Muhammad was supposed to make a written request to make it known that she wanted to be notified. If that is the state of the law, because how could she fill out some kind of a form saying that she's supposed to want to be notified when no one even told her that she's supposed to fill out that form? Now, the statute says at a disposition hearing or a sentencing that could be made known to a victim that they have this right, and the county, the state agrees that they never told Ms. Muhammad that she had this right, and Ms. Muhammad agrees that she never said that she wanted to be notified because she had no idea she had such a right. Yes, Judge Larkin?
Counsel, I've looked at the statute that you've cited, and it's pretty clear that the notice provisions and rights described in that statute are triggered by a disposition or sentencing hearing. And in this case, there was no sentencing hearing because there was an acquittal. What is your argument regarding why that statute would nonetheless apply in a case where there is not a sentencing hearing?
Right. So that's what I was just getting to, Your Honor. So thank you for that. Clearly, there was no sentencing. There was no conviction. Now, oftentimes we refer to disposition as sentencing. Now, that couldn't be what this sentence means, because if disposition and sentencing mean the same thing in this statute, then the words are surplusage. And we know that the canons of construction are against that. Legislature doesn't write extra words for no reason, just to give people more things to read. So each word must mean something distinct and different. Disposition, of course, doesn't have to mean sentencing. It can mean how the case is disposed of. So in this case, there was disposition. The case was disposed of by an acquittal. So arguably, she should have been notified right there. The other thing is, this is largely about common sense. Why is the county attorney's office even filing a brief in this case when, in fact, they told me, the head of their appellate division called me up and told me they were not going to file a brief? Now, they're free to change their mind, but here's the point is, what is it that they have in this fight? What is their dog in this fight? It is impossible to conceive of the fact that they're filing a brief in this, because they have no stake in this. They shouldn't be filing a brief, which goes to show you that something is really wrong in this case. Because they prosecuted this person, he gets an expungement with no notice to the victims, and then they're fighting to keep the expungement records sealed. That makes no sense whatsoever. Now, below, the county attorney's office had argued that Amina Muhammad is not even a victim, and they seem to have abandoned that position now. Yes, Judge Larkin?
Counsel, what authority do you cite to support your premise that the remedy for a county attorney's failure to comply with the notice requirements in the statute on which you rely is to allow access to the expungement record? I mean, let's assume for the sake of argument that you're right. Your client was entitled to notice. The county attorney didn't give it. That was a statutory violation. What law says the remedy is access to the expungement file? Do you have any authority to support that as the remedy for the alleged violation?
Well, that's a good question. Thank you. Unfortunately, you cut out a little bit, but I got the question. there clearly is nothing in the statute that says that if the state does not give notice, that therefore the expungement is vacated, or therefore blank, fill in the blank, is the remedy. Now, my authority would be common sense, because why did the legislature write this requirement in? Obviously, the legislature wrote in the requirement of victim notification so that victims would A, know about a request for expungement, B,
They could file an objection. They could hire an attorney if they wanted to, which people have done that before in similar circumstances. B, they could write a letter to the judge. D, they can appear and give live testimony at the expungement hearing. So here, we're not in a position where we're appealing the granting of the expungement, right? That's not what this case is before this court today. Certainly, Ms. Muhammad might want to do that. She might not, but we have no ability to know if the statute was filed, who may have filed
affidavits or objections to the expungement. We have no ability to know any of that because we cannot look into the expungement file. So they appear to have abandoned their position that Ms. Muhammad was not a victim, which I credit them for that and their right to do that. So if she is a victim, then she's given all the protections in the statutes, and you could assume, for the sake of argument, that she's entitled to notification. She wasn't given notification. There's no dispute about that. And she never asked to be given notification because she had no idea that she had that right, which is common sense, because how would a person know that? So one might also suggest, because a lot of this case is about common sense and something is really wrong here, and if Ms. Muhammad doesn't win her appeal, that may be how it comes out. That may be that that's the court's decision, and that may be a correct decision, but then it would go to tell you that there is something really wrong with the statutes in this area. Then the Court of Appeals needs to issue a decision so that that would be plain to everyone that something is really backwards about the statutes in this area, because look at how this victim has been treated. Her brother was left in the street, bleeding to death, murdered, and everyone knows who did it. Everyone knows that this murderer intimidated witnesses, and this is what the state argued at the trial. This is not what we're saying. This is what the state argued at trial. And how does it make any sense that the county attorney's office then doesn't object to the expungement when they went and argued at the murder trial that this guy is getting away with murder because one of the witnesses was so scared, his father comes into the trial court and testifies and says, my son left the country because he was so scared of this guy and his friends. So how is the county not objecting to expungement? Well, we can't begin to answer those questions unless we can look into the expungement file. So if victim notification means anything, then a victim has to be notified of expungement. And certainly, you know, she'd probably love to appeal. She'd also like to file a wrongful death action. Yes, Judge Larkin?
This is not the only right granted victims in criminal cases. I mean, we have a whole Victim Rights Act. Is there any case law that discusses what is supposed to happen when the state fails to comply with the rights of victims as spelled out in statute? Did you look in any other context to see if there's any guidance?
I'm not aware of that. We'll have to see if we can find anything else that we can submit to you, but I would believe that, for example, and I think it's an interesting point to look at all the rights that victims have. A commonly one that comes up in court is that prosecutors are supposed to notify victims of a proposed resolution. Now, of course, the victim doesn't have to consent, right? The prosecution can still enter an agreement even if the victim says, heck no, I don't agree with that. Yes, Judge Larkin?
That raises an interesting issue. Under the expungement statutes, does the victim of the crime have the right to object or make arguments against expungement?
Well, I would say absolutely yes, because I've done many expungements.
Well, I guess what I'm asking is not what you would say, but what does the statute say? Because I hear your frustration with what the statute says, but we're obligated to apply the statute as written. So does the expungement statute authorize the victim of the crime to object to the request for expungement and to participate in the expungement proceedings as a party, as the county attorney or law enforcement agency is authorized to do?
Well, when I say I would say yes, that means that's my understanding of what the statute says. So now there's two parts to your question, though, Judge Larkin.
One part is, do they have a right to object? I would say absolutely yes, because one of the statutory factors the court's supposed to examine, the 12 statutory factors in an expungement, is what are the views of the victim? And it goes on to say law enforcement, so on and so forth. Now, of course, a court could still grant an expungement even if the victim is objecting, but wouldn't the expungement court want to know that the victim is objecting? Of course they would. Now, it doesn't say that the victim is a party, and maybe there's an open question, which I think the state may have raised in their brief about, would a person like Amina Mohammed, would she have standing to appeal a granting of an expungement? But of course, we're not there yet. That's not this case. Yes, Judge Logan?
As I read the statute, an argument could be made that because notice of the victim is referenced in a statute, statutory provision regarding disposition or sentencing, when we're talking about victims in this context, we're talking about victim of a crime of someone who's been convicted of the crime. In other words, I mean, I think the district court was quite clear. There is no argument that your client was the victim of a crime. The issue is, does the statute require that the victim be the victim of the crime as found committed by a jury? In other words, that there was a guilty verdict, someone's being sentenced, and that's how victim is defined in this context.
Statute doesn't require that, from my understanding. See, my time is about to expire.
Well, perhaps you could address that more if you choose during your rebuttal time. Thank you for your argument.
Thank you.
And who is appearing on behalf of respondent, State of Minnesota in this case?
Good afternoon. This is Adam Petras, Assistant Hennepin County Attorney, and I'm appearing on behalf of the state.
You may proceed with your argument.
Thank you, Judge Larkin. I sympathize with the pain that Ms. Mohammed and her family have suffered as a result of what happened to her brother, especially in light of what happened when Ms. Mohammed saw defendant in the underlying criminal case, B.O., Mr. Omar, back in January of 2019, and he threatened her. And I understand that led to her request for HRO. But unfortunately, as I explained in my brief, Mr. Keller is arguing for what he thinks the law should be as opposed to what the law currently is. And I just want to briefly respond to two points that Mr. Keller raised in his argument today. The first one is about the meaning of the term disposition hearing in the statute. I'm not aware of that argument, the argument that a disposition includes an acquittal or a not guilty verdict. I'm not aware of that being made before the district court or in any of the briefing in this matter. So I'm not sure if it's fair for this court to consider it on appeal. But if this court is inclined to do so and address that argument, what I would say is that I think it's inconsistent with the plain meaning and common usage of the term disposition hearing. To me, a disposition hearing, as opposed to a sentencing hearing, well, a disposition hearing would refer to something like a stay of adjudication, in which there is not a sentencing that takes place or a sentence that is imposed, but it is a disposition that happens in a case and a hearing at which that disposition is issued. I am not aware of any case law in Minnesota or anywhere else that holds that the return of a not guilty verdict or an acquittal constitutes a dispositional hearing. And the second point I believe I heard Mr. Keller say is that he spoke to management in the appellate unit in which I work. I'm not sure who he recalls speaking with. What I can tell the court is that I conversed about this specific case with both Gene Burdorf, who is the managing attorney of the Special Litigation Division, in which the appeals unit is housed, and John Schmidt, who is the senior attorney in charge of the appeals unit. And they both were aware of the position I was taking in my brief, didn't say anything about a contrary statement to that. The state filed a brief in this case because it's obligated to enforce the law, and that is what, as the law is currently written, and that is what Chief Judge Bernardson did in this case, is that she applied the applicable statutes. And again, I sympathize with the frustration that both Mr. Keller and Ms. Muhammad feel in this case, but I don't believe there is a legal basis for the relief that they are seeking. I am happy to answer any questions that the panel has about this case. But seeing no questions, I will simply rely on what I put in my brief, and I would ask you to affirm the decision that Chief Judge Brahardson was forced to reach in this case. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Keller, would you like to make a rebuttal argument?
Thank you, Your Honor. I wanted to touch upon what Judge Larkin was saying earlier is, obviously there are a lot of victim rights statutes, a whole chapter. And so, for example, with the analogy that we were talking about before, a victim is supposed to be informed of a proposed resolution. So the prosecutor could say, we offered them, you plead guilty to count two, the defendant plead guilty to count two, and we're going to dismiss the other counts, and we're going to reduce the sentence to 90 days instead of 3 years in prison. The victim can say, heck no. The victim does not have a right to veto that, and there's no statute that says the court is supposed to take into consideration the fact that a victim might disagree with an agreement, a plea agreement, in deciding whether to accept the agreement or not. I think a expungement context is different, as we discussed, because it clearly says that the victim is supposed to be notified and the court is supposed to take the victim's wishes into consideration. And it doesn't mean they have an absolute right to veto an expungement, but it means they get to have a voice there. And so unless the statutes are of no effect and they're just a waste of words and a waste of time, which is contrary to the canons of construction, of course, then notification is essential for a victim to make her voice heard, especially in a case like this where someone was murdered and was left in the street bleeding to death. This was a person who was a college graduate who was murdered, who was a AmeriCorps volunteer. So I think there is a distinction, for example, between those two different parts of the victim rights chapters, sections. So there is a distinction. Just because you have a right to notification, you may not have a right to object, but I think a victim absolutely has a right to object. It doesn't mean they get to veto an expungement, but a court wants to know that. And so that's a very important right. And if this is the way the statutes are, that a victim is not required to be notified under these circumstances, and the Court of Appeals needs to tell people that, because the legislature would want to remedy that, because this is not what the legislature intended in a case like this. There couldn't be anything more serious than a first-degree murder charge. Now, another argument that's been made, for example, by the district court was that well, the district court is not going to reweigh the evidence to decide if the person was maybe guilty by a preponderance of the evidence or something like that, essentially saying that maybe you automatically get an expungement because you are acquitted. Well, of course, that's not what the statutes say. The legislature could have passed a law saying if you're acquitted, you automatically get an expungement. Instead, the statutes say that it's basically a presumed expungement. But if the state could show that the burden upon the state of sealing the records is greater than the benefit to the petitioner, then an expungement does not have to be granted. So a trial court would want to know that the victim is objecting and you don't get an automatic expungement. And I believe the trial court would want to take into consideration a case like this with these extraordinary facts, where the state alleged that the murderer intimidated witnesses and made them come to court and either say they suddenly couldn't remember that they saw the person pull the trigger, or even worse, they were so scared they fled to France. So it may be a very unusual case, but if the court decides that the victim is not required to be notified by the state of the right to say that they want, yes, Judge Larkin?
The issue of what happens if there's been a violation of a victim's rights in a criminal case. And I'm understanding your argument to be that your client was entitled to be notified of the request for expungement, even though there was an acquittal, and she was not notified. So the remedy is for her to have access to the file of the expungement proceeding. Is that your position? Mr. Keller?
Yeah, I'm sorry, my connection is cutting out here. So that's our position, is that the statutes were violated. The remedy would be that she should have access.
Let me ask you this then. You're saying the remedy is that she should have access. And as I understand your presentation this afternoon, you've indicated you don't have any authority saying that that is the remedy, that is that she should have access. What I'm wondering is whether her remedy is actually under Minnesota statute section 611A.74, crime victims' rights complaints, which sets out a procedure by which victims may file complaint about alleged violation of their rights in criminal proceedings. And the commissioner is authorized to investigate those complaints, including gaining access to the files in the underlying procedure, and then making recommendation regarding what, if anything, should happen if there's been a violation, including making recommendations to the legislature. Did you consider at all the application of 611A.74 in your argument? I mean, it seems to me the answer to the question, what's supposed to happen if there has been a violation of a victim's right in a criminal case, is the victim's recourse is under 611A.74. Do you care to address that at all?
Unfortunately, you cut out there. It was 611A point, which one, Judge Larkin?
7-4, crime victim rights and complaints. Okay. Well, perhaps you hadn't had a chance to consider that.
0.73, is that right?
611A.74.
Oh. There may be other remedies, but I mean, clearly she would like to appeal the granting of the expungement. There may be other ways to get the records that she may want to pursue. But the other thing that I wanted to say is this whole case is a complete failure of common sense, because when someone is acquitted of first degree murder and the state has argued that the murderer intimidating witnesses and such, then one would think that the prosecutor then walks out of the courtroom very disappointed that they got a not guilty verdict, but they would say to the victim and the victim's family that, well, you know, there's going to be an expungement petition filed, because of course, if someone got an acquittal, there's going to be an expungement petition filed.
Mr.
Now, this
Keller?
Is regardless of whether
Mr.
they're
Keller?
Required to do this or not. I'm saying this is common sense.
And Mr. they would Keller, say, I appreciate your arguments about common sense, and we've heard them. And it does appear that there is a statute that answers the issue you're raising. Isn't the county attorney expected and supposed to do this? And it appears that the legislature has provided a statute that allows a victim in such circumstances a way to file complaint, have the complaint investigated. And I think I can speak for my colleagues on the bench this afternoon that we have the utmost sympathy for your client and the terrible loss that she and her family have suffered. And we appreciate the arguments that you've made on her behalf. And at this point, the case is submitted, and you will have our decision within the timelines required by statute.